Welcome to episode number 27 of our podcast, Up on Foil, where we talk all about foiling, but not just about foiling, like today. Today, we have Benjamin Friant, or Benji, here with us. He's a Swiss professional freestyle scooter rider, video producer, and social media content creator. He's known for his innovative scootering style. He also excels in snow scoot and foil scoot, doing crazy things. Beyond sports, he specializes in video production, photography, and drone filming. Friant has a strong online presence with almost 600,000 YouTube subscribers, crazy, and millions of views, inspiring audiences, and his creativity and passion. Thank you very much, Benji, for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Is there anything you want to add to that right away?
I think it's already quite a description that you've made.
I actually missed some things, and I couldn't find it really. Maybe it was just because I was hooked on your videos and it didn't show up. But I saw somewhere that you won European championships as well, but I couldn't find when and where. Can you maybe tell us how that went or when that was?
Yeah, the first one was in 2006. So it was one of the first scooter competitions in the world, actually, in Montreux, Switzerland. That's where the first ever scooter competition happened worldwide. And then like 1 week later, one in the US happened, like the second one. But the first one was in Montreux, Switzerland, where I was living. So it's a huge coincidence. And then after that, well, I have to remember, I think it was 2012, maybe something like I'd have to check in my archives. But yeah, I won two European championships and two, and then like some Finnish championships and things like that. But yeah, it's I'm lost in the things. I don't really keep track of these things.
You're the first world champion, essentially.
No, I would not say that. They were probably better. Like the US guys didn't come to the competition, so they were probably better.
So if you see Gael and me wobbling around, we're standing on balance boards again. That's like our new thing on the podcast. So we just keep moving, improve our balance while working. So this is awesome. Yeah, we might fall, but don't worry about us. So how were your last days? You're pretty busy at the moment.
I am very busy, yes. So I've just come back from South Africa for holidays and almost never really take holidays. Usually when I plan my holidays, it's I go do a filming trip somewhere. This was like purely holidays, but I still managed to do some foiling and then came back. And at the same time, so I came out with the Foil Scoot, which is the scooter foil, which is actually on the way. The first production is actually on the way now to the first clients, which is for me extremely exciting. Finally, I see the product that I built in the hands of other people, and I'm extremely looking forward to their feedbacks. So I have to manage this. I'm finding a few distributors in different countries as well. So it's picking up, but a lot of stuff to organize, a lot of stuff going on. I still have my jobs next to it. So and I have Norway coming up two last weeks of March again. So I love Norway. So I fly. Last year I went two times to Norway. Yeah.
And before we dive into the foil scoot and how you developed it and how you came up probably with the idea, you mentioned that you have another job.
Yeah, I'm a video producer. Mm-hmm. So next to this, I've always linked videos to what I was doing, freestyle sports or free ride or whatever, gliding sports in general, they go together with video. It's a very visual, these are very visual sports. And video has always been so attractive to me. I found it's a great way to show what you can do. It's a great way to be creative as well. And this is actually my job. And next, I use all my skills in the video that I've learned doing freestyle scootering. I didn't do any school for this. I've learned everything by myself. And then now I'm pushing it towards foiling, because this foiling is fairly new, and especially pump foiling. So there's so many things to be done, and this is my main focus. But my main income comes from video producing.
So you're producing videos for companies here or private persons?
Mostly in Switzerland. So I work with a knife company called Panorama Knife. If you're from Switzerland, maybe you know it. It's the knife. The teeth of the knives are mountain panoramas. Wait, hold on one sec.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Wow, this is a bad example, but yeah, like that. This is a cheese knife, and they do knives like this. So I create all their content. I work for banks. I work for associations, events, things like this. I do a lot of corporate videos, and sometimes some cool projects for example, Norona. It's a clothing brand from Norway, but they just opened a new shop in Switzerland. So I work for.
You have your own website where people can find you?
Yes, benjaminfryant.net.
All right. Yeah. Very cool. So when you are doing your things, do you have a video guy of your team maybe with you that films you, or do you do that yourself, or how does that work?
This is one of my main issues, actually. I wish I had someone following me around, but sometimes I do, thanks to... Alex on Coco, he's quite big on social media as well. He's a professional FPV drone pilot, so all my FPV clips are filmed by him. We know each other because I used to be his manager. He was a freestyle scooter rider sponsored by the company that was sponsored as well, and I was his manager, his team manager basically. So that's how we met, and I've known him very young. Then he stopped scootering and for drone operating. And now we hang out again together doing two different things. But yeah, so when I get projects, for example, sponsored by Red Bull, and we fly either to Iceland, Norway, or wherever, I always manage to get a little bit of budget together so that I can invite him and maybe pay him when there's enough budget to create some clips. So either he gets paid or he gets free holidays, which is also nice. And sometimes we have some cool projects in Switzerland if he's available, and we still like to hang out. So thanks to him, I have nice drone clips. And then sometimes I do some projects with Killian Brown from Switzerland as well. He's a really, really good friend. And he's not a big fan of filming, but sometimes I just put the phone in his hand and ask him to film some stuff. He will love listening to this because that's a question, that conversation we had already yesterday as well.
I saw you were with him, for example, when you passed that bridge with the on the foil.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe we can just have a few of your videos explained. Maybe you can tell us where that was, and how that went.
So I cannot remember the exact name of the place. It was like Fontaine de blah blah blah, fountain of something. It's an aqueduct, like a viaduct, like bridge transporting water, which was actually kind of like a project of mine for a while. That one was found by Killian on the way back from Zarautz, like Spain. We were foiling together, and on the way back, we were like, "There's two spots that are amazing. One of them is actually that bridge." And I was like, "Holy shit, I was looking for bridges like this, and how did you find that one?" And it was perfect. Like, it was extremely difficult to foil. But it was really, the scenery was perfect. The weather was great. And I was actually foiled there before. And I discovered that afterwards by a company called Horu. They're a French foiling company. And they've actually foiled there. Like they've been towed through with a big board and through the bridge. So we were not the first doing this. But... yeah, the starting point from this, because it was extremely shallow, and we don't realize in the video, but it was like 50 centimeters or something of water.
That's very little.
Yeah,
and it's like extremely rocks.
Shallow, not wide at all, and the current, the stream was quite strong.
Was that again? Well, no, you followed both sides.
Yeah. I find the way back was easier because you get the stream like lifting up the foil, but I had it quite easy compared to Killian. Because I had the handlebars, so I could start already on the bridge. Yeah. Killian couldn't start on the bridge, so he had to start in the river a little higher up, and then do a super sharp turn into the bridge. And I have no idea how he managed to do this.
Well, his turns are super sharp, so maybe he had to do that for that. But 50 centimeters is very little. Did you touch with the foil sometimes on the rocks?
Yeah,
maybe.
I remember in one video we can see your F4 foil,
Yeah.
Destroy
Oh, hey. I mean, you don't want to see my ex's phone now.
it. Probably not.
After each trip, you know, this is Kilian and I now have the same sponsor. We're both with exes. And he's always like, "Hey, Benji, you know, I can lend you some of my stuff. You know, we're in the same team." And I was like, I don't think you want to do that." It's just like I try to take care as much as possible of my stuff, but like I foil in places that are really not, you're not supposed to foil there. It's extremely complicated. You hit rocks and stuff. So it gets me nice clips, but on the other hand,
Expensive.
like I
Yeah.
destroy all my foils. So yeah,
And wasn't
balance.
it dangerous, that bridge? Because you're high, you haven't got a fence or something.
So it was, I think, more impressive than it actually was, because when you're on the bridge, when you're in the water, you're actually like quite low. You see that you're on the bridge, but it's not like you're about to fall if you go on either side. You would really have to f do a massive fuck up to jump. One side doesn't have
Fence.
fence, yeah. But you're not supposed to go on that, and it's quite wide, the concrete. But I've actually had a list now of many of them in the UK and in France that are actually. Some are easier, some are actually way more dangerous than that one, because if you fall, you fall. So this is one of the next projects for either this year or next year.
That's very cool.
And what was like the So we know that probably the best one for you was the one in where like in the ice. But what was the weirdest of these challenges, or the most complicated, or dangerous that you've ever had?
Oh man, there's so many. So obviously, you mean the one with the icebergs, or the last one I posted with
The
the
one from
on the
under the
fence?
ice. The
Cutting
one
the ice.
where you were
Yeah.
under the ice.
Under the ice. So
I
this
don't
is
know which one were you talking
like
about. There's so many. I
Oh.
meant the one in the iceberg, but yeah, also the one under the ice is crazy.
Okay, so people won't know what the you guys mean by under the ice, so I'll probably keep that for last. But the Iceland was, the whole trip was extremely difficult, mostly because the most of the places that we went to were forbidden. Like you were not supposed to go in the water because it's too dangerous, or you have to cross a place that you're not supposed to walk in because they closed it because too many tourists were walking there. So we were going in full commando mode every time we had to go somewhere. And icebergs, we tried the first day of the trip because that was this whole trip was financed by Red Bull. So we had to get the clip I promised, which was foiling between the icebergs first, at least like that I could relax for the rest of the trip. We went there, and then as soon as I started training, the wind picked up and we had like 100 kilometer gust of wind. And the only way I could start was facing the wind. So I'll let you imagine, I did maybe 15 or 16 tries, and every time I started pumping, I stopped because of the wind. And drones couldn't fly, so we're like, okay, we have to keep this for maybe later in the trip. And then came back the last day, and the last day of the trip, and then we could manage to do it. We did one single try before all the security and the tourist boats and stuff like that arrived. So we were really pressed by time, and we had to wake up every time at first light. We had to be ready to shoot, basically. So that was Iceland. A lot more things. I could write a Bible about Iceland. There's so many like not horrible, but like very bad shit happens over there because of the weather and stuff. But yeah, that's another story. And then the upside down under the ice. So I had this idea for 2 years now that I wanted to try to ride my scooter upside down under the ice, which is like, I've seen this before, like divers, they go upside down under the ice, you know, with the palms, the flippers, and they try to walk or do some funny stuff upside down. And I was like, this could be super funny to do it. I didn't realize how much work it would have to be to, like, not work, but like preparation and figure out the best way to do it. Like it took us really like a while to figure out the safety issues and everything. Because I was with my diving instructor and one of my best friends. He's also a professional diver. And still, I think 5 minutes before we were supposed to go in the water, we were like, shit, we didn't think about this.
Like what?
Like, how am I supposed to? Originally we agreed that I would have a mini bottle of air that I could breathe in for 5 minutes upside down. This bottle that my instructor gave me was never tested in cold water. So he was like, there's absolutely no way that you're going to breathe into this unless you absolutely have to. So I had it, but I was not allowed to touch it unless I was dying, basically. And then he wanted to stay. So he wanted me to stay next to him the whole time with the regulator in the mouth, but then we would see him in the shot. So like, we had to figure something out. And in the end, we decided to just, I would have to hold my breath, basically, for a few seconds. Then he would come back, give me some air, and then we would try again and get in position to get the shot. And yeah, this whole thing was scary, dangerous, and probably will never do it again unless I have another shitty crazy idea. We'll see next.
How did you come up with all these crazy ideas? Like, do you dream them during the night?
It's funny, but yeah, some of them they come up while dreaming, and you're like, then in the morning you're like, nah, maybe, okay, I'll just write it down just in case.
Yeah.
And then of course you get inspired from other things, and I'm a nature lover, so every time I see beautiful scenery, I'm like, well, I don't think anyone's ever flight there, could be nice.
That is amazing. Also,
yeah,
maybe we can turn back time a little bit and talk about how it first started, because the first video of YouTube on YouTube I saw of you was 15 years ago, was the water jump, I think, or oh, it was, yeah, like second jump. Or third, and well, now you said that you're 35. If you don't want to have it on show, we can edit that, but no. You're getting a little bit older. If you look back on your videos from back then, how does that make you feel?
I'm still having a great time. I'm not as solid and resistant as before, obviously. I care more now if I crash and injure myself than I used to. But yeah, no, it's. I'm glad I made all these videos in the past, because they are amazing memories to have. And this is something that my mom taught me from very young. She's always filming us as a kid, as kids. And we're super glad to be able to watch this in the future and remember these moments that we would never remember if it was not filmed. So I'm glad I made all this, but I'm realizing now that there are some things that I've done that, I don't want my kids to do that.
Because it's dangerous.
Yeah. Especially the snow squid part. Like, I think that the one of the scariest and most dangerous stunts I've made are way on the snow squid. Yeah.
So it was your mom that inspired you to do videos. But when you did when you put the first one on YouTube, did you just do that for your own memory? Or were you like, I want people to see this?
Yeah, it was more like this. You know, you're young. You want to show. So I started having sponsors at that time already. So I was already writing. I got my first professional sponsor in 2006. I was 16 years old. And it was so important to show what you were able to do. So at the beginning, we didn't, like when I started making videos, there was no YouTube, there was no Facebook, nothing. Huh? It came after. So then Dailymotion was before YouTube, I think. So I started posting on.
Did you have a MySpace page as well?
I didn't have MySpace. I had Skyrock, but this was before that. The Skyblog was horrible. Oh man, this memory is Yeah.
No idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, you're too young, man. It's just, it was the emo platform.
That's just
for kids. You could post pictures. It was like the Instagram at the time. That was pretty funny. But yeah, so it was like important to share for sponsors. Also, at this time, scootering was extremely young. Like, I was there from the beginning of the sport. And this means that there's everything to be done. You know, there's like all the tricks needs to be invented, everything. So it was kind of I'm not going to say competition, but kind of a rivalry. Like we need to show that we've done this first so that we can claim it. And at the same time, it's like, for sponsors and also sharing to your friends that like you had a great weekend and blah, blah, blah. So it was like, yeah, it was a mix of these three things. And this is the reason why we made videos.
I read somewhere that you landed the first, or you documented the first landing of a double backflip. Is that true?
No. I've personally done the double backflip and double backflip no-hander, so without the hands, on the Nitro Circus ramp. And this was my goal before ending my career as a scooter rider. I didn't stop it after this, but like I said, from the moment I land this on a huge ramp, I have nothing else to prove to myself. I'm really happy. The first backflip was landed by Terry Price. I cannot tell you the year, but it's a UK rider. And I was not there when he did it. But I'm never going to claim
that
first double backflip.
I'm not sure anymore where I read it. So that was wrong. Thank you for putting that right. But let's talk about your scooter days. You said it was a new sport. You probably had to name a few tricks as well. But I saw in a video, and I can also, if I remember back, we skaters, I'm not really a skater. I wasn't really a skater, but probably a little bit more than being a scooter guy. Because, yeah, we said, well, people who ride scooters are moms going for shopping and drug addicts. That's what we said.
Wow.
Sorry. But there's a rivalry,
like
or
things.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. That's but there was, or there, I mean, maybe there still is a rivalry between people on scooter and people on skates. Still a thing anymore? Way less.
Yeah. It was, being there from the beginning of the sport, I can tell you it was hardcore in some instances. We had, even in Switzerland, I've seen, I was young. I think I was like 18 years old, and I've seen skaters in Winterthur, for example, just throwing their skateboard at like 7-year-old kids, you know, in their faces because they failed a trick and a scooter rider was passing by and just like threw their skateboard in their face. Wow. I've seen insane stuff worldwide. When I traveled the world for riding, there's, of course, Switzerland was pretty civilized compared to other countries. But we had the bullying, which was really bullying. We had the bullying in the skate parks. And then when social media arrived, of course, it transferred to social media. It was much easier to bully online. And I'm actually extremely proud of how we did, because skateboarding bullied out of the skate park rollerbladers. And this is one of the major reason why rollerblading died, basically, over the years. And scootering just stayed there, and we stick together, and we faced all the bullying, we faced all the critics, and we are extremely pedagogic in our way of presenting ourselves, we always teaching the kids. We also protect them when we see skaters attacking kids in the skate parks. We mediate a lot. Over the years, we got accepted. You still have the old, like, super elite guys that have, it's pretty much the same thing in surfing. Like, it's the people that only have their sport in their lives. And as soon as something kind of bothers them in their little bubble, they go crazy. But you have the same thing in, for example, in the working environment. If, like, in a company, if someone lives for their job and that's their only bubble, if suddenly you put the tape on their table, they freak out because that's a little bit, it's kind of the same thing. So, but it got a lot better over the years. And now we get along in Switzerland. There's almost no more problems. So it took a while.
Did you do some skateboarding as well?
Yeah. Started with skateboarding.
All right. So you probably had a different approach to skaters, because you said, well, I can do both, but I choose to, like, go on the scooter.
You know, if someone wants to criticize you, they,
you are not good enough at skateboarding. That's why you picked up a scooter.
Maybe you're right. I mean, you know, I just didn't, skateboarding was just not my thing. And I tried something else and I got better at something else. And that was my choice.
Yeah, but
I look at scooter, It looks super cool because you can do different things, like the spinning around of the actual board. But then, I mean, the shin bone, It's something that hurts so much. And if I see you spinning around, I'm like, oh, take care of your shin bone. You must be kind funny. You must have no problem with getting hurt.
So it's part of the process. I mean, you get hurt. I never broke a bone, but I had pretty other serious injuries. My lung collapsed twice. I broke my knee, you know, I had like, I don't know, 12 brain concussions. I don't know how I don't have PTSD, you know, it's just, it's really, I've had some pretty nasty things. It's part of the game. I mean, it comes with it. The shin thing, never. Funny enough.
Really?
Yeah. And I think it's because when you take on scootering seriously, you automatically have the reflex of never hitting your shin,
your
you know?
Shell. Okay.
Yeah. So that's not entirely true. The only moment it happened was when I was just walking next to my scooter and someone kicked my scooter and it just flipped and hit my shin, you know? It was kind of an inside joke with us. Yeah. So that's the only, but voluntarily, never. Okay. Like, I never had this.
And so were you making a living off of your career as a scooterman?
I did for many years, yeah. I did for, I think in Switzerland, we only to have been able to make a living out of, like, a good living out of scootering. The second person is still living out of it now, but he moved out of Switzerland. He's traveling the world now to do this. And funny enough, he's coming from the same village as me. So, like, there's something in the water of the village, I don't know, specifically for scooter riders. But I could make a living as a professional athlete for a few years, and then I got hired by my sponsor to develop the scooters, to manage the teams. And I was 6 months of the year in the office and 6 months of the year traveling for either competitions or shows.
What was that company called?
Micro Scooter, Micro Mobility.
They're still doing their thing, right?
Yeah, but they don't do freestyle directly. They bought another company called Chili to do the freestyle now. They've been There has been a change of boss, which is also the reason why I left. And then now they're focusing also more on, they have a little car now, and they're focusing on the car, and they're still selling products. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you transition to videography and foiling, actually?
Can I just ask one more thing? Sorry.
Go ahead, please.
Because I saw, when I looked at your videos, I saw like these three different, or maybe four different things. One was scootering, just going, kind of vlogs, just you with funny videos or going somewhere and explaining how it went. Then you had the skimboard, the maybe scooter skimboard. No, it's actually more. Then the snow scoot and now the foil scoot. It's like probably five different things you do. What was the transition from one to the other? And I think what you said, the foil is now at the end. It's not the most current thing.
Yeah. So after I quit Micro, I opened my scooter school, and I was aiming to also develop more my community on social media. And I know the trend at the time was vlogs. I was never a big fan of vlogs because I was never talking in front of a camera. I was not good at it at all. I was, believe it or not, I'm really introverted normally, or I was at least. And so for me, facing the camera, talking to the camera was like a difficult exercise at first, and then you get used to it. And then I started doing these vlogging styles, always doing concepts. Some other people were doing the same in France, also from the scooter world, but they were always copying the concepts from the US, and I always have an issue copying others. I like to create my own. So I created this concept that's never been done yet. So like I tried different wheels and stuff like that on the scooter, make a bigger scooter, a smaller scooter, whatever, like a scooter made of cardboard. And then I ran out of ideas and I was like, hey, I'm not a water guy. So, but like no one's been on water with a scooter before, or not that I know of. Let's try to mix like scootering and like maybe a water craft. And one of my best friends, he's called Adrian Raza. He's the best flatboard skimboarder in the world. And we had the same sponsor at the time. Like it was an online shop. And I was like, hey, this is the perfect opportunity to do a video for the shop and also for us and to finally meet. Because at that time, I didn't really know him personally. And we met and it just matched. extremely well. We became extremely good friends, and we did the skimboard scooter, which worked. And I used it again afterwards in other things because I love skimboarding. Then it was time to go in deeper water, let's say. And then I tried the wakeboard scooter, wake surf scooter, which was extremely good. Like, that's one of the things I think you can, that's the closest one that you could compare to the foil scoot, on the fact that it actually really works well. And people that I went with to try it, they were like, they were not scooter fans at all. Like, we like each other, but they don't really like scootering. But they tried it anyway. And they were like, you know, we can see how that would be a good product for kids to learn. Like, because you're more stable with the handlebar. As soon as you put a handlebar somewhere, it's more stable, more control. So it worked quite well. And then in my head at that time, I already was like, hey, I've seen these foiling videos for a few years now. I'm sure there is something to do there, but it looks so difficult. And at that time, I only saw the foilers in the ocean. No, they were not in lakes yet. I mean, I didn't see them in lakes yet. And I was like, hey, this would be amazing if I could put a handlebar on it, but how can that work? And then started seeing the first pump foilers in Switzerland. And I was like, okay, I will try this. And I built the prototype. First go, it worked, which was insane because I imagined it for so long and I didn't think it would work so well the first try, even if the prototype was horrible.
And then you were able to get on foil the first time.
Yeah. I did like 6 or 7 pumps the first time. And I had no control over the direction I was going. So I was just like, just turn left and then crashed eventually. But it worked. And I knew that if I could make the prototype better, it would work even better.
And from there, it all evolved. And now you're collaborating with Axis and another company, I guess, or it's your company.
So Axis is providing the foils, and the rest is my company, Foilscoot. So we made a package. It makes, in my opinion, sense if we have one of the benchmarks foil under the Foilscoot. And if it's my sponsor, it's even better because I can promote it anytime I'm on the Foilscoot.
You started a Kickstarter for a Foilscoot. Maybe you can talk us through how it all started. I saw a video of you making your board with someone. Was that out of that happened, or were there just like a few trials to see which one would work best? And how do you produce? Where do you produce? How can one get a foil scoop? Maybe the whole story.
Yeah, so at the beginning I tried with the plank of wood, and I had the issue that every time I would turn my back on the foil scoop, it just disappeared. And it would basically sink. It was too heavy. So a few times I had to dive and then pick it up. So I was like, no, I need a proper board that floats, reinforced with carbon fiber and maybe some wood inside. So I did, I think, total 7 prototypes, or 6 prototypes before I asked someone to shape the board for me. That person later abused my the whole situation, basically decided to steal my ID and do some business on the side. But like, yeah, so that's another story. But he made a board for me based on what I told him. And I was like, okay, it worked. And this gave me like this kind of a first idea of how the perfect final product would look like. And this is what I've done now. So I corrected everything that needed to be corrected from the other board. Made the design better, I made it stronger, now we have a product that is, I think, perfect in my opinion. It's hard for me to imagine that I can make it better than this. So there will be things that will change in other products. Probably it will be colors or whatever, but design-wise, it would be hard to make it better.
So you have that board, you screw the foil under it, and you kind of slide the handlebar, what's it called?
Slide the foil and the handlebar.
Oh, you slide both.
Yeah, which makes it super easy because you can use then the foil scoot as a pump foil. The board is 1.7 kilograms. It might be a little heavier for the final production, might be 1.8 kilograms because I added an extra protection for shocks because that's one of the biggest. This is product destined for targeted for beginners or people that want to get into bump foiling. So they won't really probably care of their boards as a bump foiler would or a surfer would. So it's important that it's like shock proof somehow. And yeah, you basically, you have the handlebar that you just slide in, you tighten up, same thing for the foil, and you adjust it however you want, and then you have the product. Yeah.
And talking about specs, so I guess that you can buy it with an axis set, and you can maybe buy just the board with the handlebar, and you can then plug it onto your set.
Yeah.
Like, how are like the dimensions? And then how hard it is for a person to get into it?
Maybe I can talk to you about it later, Kyle, because I tried it.
So we have another witness testimonial. So the board is 96 centimeters long, 33 wide, and 3 centimeters thick. So it's a small board, but big enough for pumping. If you compare with the Gong board, which is extremely short, as you don't, I mean, you know better than anyone, Gael, that Gong, like, because I know that your toes were coming out of the edge of the, Kilian, I think, wrote something like that in one of your videos. It's hilarious. So yeah, in my opinion, the perfect length for pumping. And it's important that it's a bit even longer for having the handlebar. It's 1.8 kilograms, as I said, 3 layers of carbon fiber, and to basically start pump foiling, as it's a product for beginners, it makes it a lot easier to start on this and a lot safer, especially. The problem with pump foilers, or like when you want to get into pump foiling, is it's super scary to throw a board like that and then jump on it. There's so many variables that you don't have control over the board for a slight second before you jump on it. So anything can happen. And jumping with the feet in the right position, then you have to understand how the foil works. So of course you lose the balance at the beginning many, many, many times. And you can actually injure yourself pretty badly if you fall on the same side of the foil, which cannot happen with the foil scoot because you always have the handlebar on your hand. So if you fall on the side with the handlebar, the foil would be the other side. So you will never touch the foil. That never happened to me. So... And also, at the start, you just have it right there next to you. You just walk a little bit fast and just step on it and you start flying. And at the beginning, you need to understand how the foil works. As soon as you know or understand how the foil works, you can start pumping, which is exactly like pumping in a pump track. I don't know if you know what a pump track is, but for the viewers, I know you guys know, but for the viewers, maybe. So it's like these little bumps made of concrete. You see them everywhere and it's like mini skate parks. And it's if you go on a scooter, on a bike, on one of these things, feels the same on the pump foil. It's quite intuitive. And then it takes, of course, a few tries, but way less than pump foiling. And yeah, that's pretty much it for the beginning.
And in terms of start, you said that the start is more versatile. Also, we can see it from your videos. But can you start from a low dock, from a rock, from a high dock? And what spot you suggest for a complete beginner?
Of course, the main spots would be, I always say, if you want to try it safely, always try on a floating platform or something made of like plastic, or because it's always like, you know, the foil of course is one thing, but you always have sharp edges and on docks and things like that. Even if the docks in general are safer to try to jump from, there's still a risk that you just go back and hit the dock. So if you have like floating plastic platforms, it would be the ideal and like it would be the absolute best. But I know that not a lot of people have this nearby. So docks, of course. But you can with the foil scoots, you can try from many places. Beach start, hardly possible. I could not manage to do it because obviously, yeah. Starting, yeah. I mean, I know you can do it, but like. Already on a pump foil, it's difficult. But if you have a handlebar on the board as well, like it gets in the way. So it's difficult. But any other starts, I could if you have a rock that is the same level as the water, I could water start from there. You just need a rock that is like this or like that,
so
that the foil can actually
go underneath.
Even if it's like a little bit like this, I can hold with the handlebar the thing far enough and then jump to make it straight, and then it takes a bit of practice. But yeah, with the pump foil, the foil scooter, I can start from almost anywhere. Even higher, like the highest I started from was 2 meters.
What?
Because you can actually lower the foil, the handlebar extremely low. Like the foil reaches the water and then you can just jump on it.
Yeah. So you can also use your foil scoot either to start getting into foiling, but then when you think, well, that's good enough, you can take it off, or depending on the situation. Yeah, if you want to do a beach start, you take your handlebar off and just go. That's so cool. So it makes it really more versatile. I have a question. You said that you got screwed over already once. Have you patented that, or is there the possibility that many other companies are just going to say, well, here is our board, you can have it with a rail for handlebar, and then you are going to be obsolete, or you have going to have even a bigger problem because big brands are going to make their own foil scoots?
So it's a very tricky question when you start a business and you have a new idea. From my experience working in the scooter industry for so long, patents don't, unless you're a pharmaceutical company or a software company or tech company, whatever, it won't stop people from copying your product. Because you would still have to attack them, like to sue them, and this would cost so much money and time and things I don't have, basically. And even to patent something is extremely expensive. Then you have to pay for in different countries to get it internationally. To even look, to pay someone to look if there's a patent already existing for this is expensive.
Okay.
So it's a nightmare. Like patents are really nightmares. Like like Micro Scooter, the company, they've sued the first company that copied them when they first came out with the foldable scooter. It took more than 10 years. They won, but in the meantime, all the other brands copied them, you know. Yeah, right. They didn't have the time or the money to copy everybody. So, and if someone wants to make a first scoot, like to build it themselves, they can. Like that's, I have no problem with this, you know. Like this, my biggest wish was to get the product out there and for people to get into pump foiling. So that's my biggest wish. And of course, I would love them to buy my product because it's gonna sound cocky, but it is the best. I mean, like I've had the most experience. Like I have the most experience with this. I have the experience also in product development and stuff like that. So no, it is the best product. I'm aware of this, that I'm the biggest asset for marketing for this product. And so I base myself on this for the success of that product. Yeah, but if a big brand like Decathlon wants to get into this and screw me over, they can, if they want to. But it's so niche.
Yeah. Plus, really, Decathlon tried it with the foils, didn't work at all. So.
Yeah. I mean, but you never know. They can come up. Maybe if they honestly, Decathlon is really smart. So if they see that there's a huge potential for them to make money, they will get into whatever with, and they will, they have like engineers, they have foilers working for them.
Yeah,
they will
find the money to do whatever. Yeah. But is there any possibility for you to think, well, if someone, a brand, like for example, Gong, you worked with Gong before, they say, well, we want to make a foil scoot as well, that you can just say, yeah, we have Gong's foil scoot by Benji. So you have the different brands, but you just add the handlebar or your name to the handlebar or something like that?
It's funny. I've asked Gong at the beginning because I started with them. I'm extremely grateful for the support that they gave me from the beginning. It didn't end up as well as I wished, but I've actually asked Gong regarding the ID, but they never listened to my message. So I tried. Didn't want to. Then I tried with other companies as well. They, it's always the issue. I had the same problem with the snow scooter. If it doesn't exist, no one wants to take the first step. It's some investment, some extra work for something that they don't know if it's going to work or not, you know? So I understand this. I'm completely okay with this. And at some point I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself. This is the reason why I started Kickstarter. I didn't have the money to invest in this huge project. So the best way was Kickstarter to see how the market would react. And there is actually, it's an expensive product. I'm aware of it because there's a lot of different components and yeah, but there is some demand for this. So I'm really excited to see the product out there. Even if I sell just a handful of them, I'm happy to see them for its good ring.
But you, when you started Kickstarter, were you, once you published it, were you nervous if anyone would at all
always.
Or were you saying, well, no, it's going to be no problem. And if it doesn't work, I didn't lose too much. How was your approach to Kickstarter?
Yeah. So, you know, I've many of my videos went viral on the Foil Scoot, and the reactions in the comments were amazing. Like, oh, where can I get this? Where can I find this? And there's a big gap between what the people say and what the people actually invest in. And this I realized with Kickstarter. I mean, it's, of course, if it would have been a $200 product, it would have been different, but it's not. So the first week or so of Kickstarter, I was really skeptical. I saw no orders, nothing. And then also, I didn't know how to promote this because this was new for me. And like, I had something to sell on my own. Like, it's, and I'm not a salesman. So I had a lot of great advice from some friends that have companies, and they're still supporting me today. They're my personal business advisors. But they pushed me to communicate extremely much on this, and it worked. Like after a few days, I had the first orders, and I mean, one order is enough to launch you. Like, it's really, I was extremely stoked if only one person would buy it. You know,
how often did you check Kickstarter if there were any?
I get mails every time someone orders something, so I don't need to check all the time.
All right.
But every time I get a mail, my day gets brighter.
All right, that is very nice.
Now we want to know first from Matt how he's to learn on it, and then you can tell us, so it's less biased.
All right, I have to be honest. I would say I know how to pump foil, and I used a little small foil maybe, so that might have been a problem. But I think it's amazing, and I want to use it for my son. Because he's scared of falling on the foil, and that's exactly what the scooter I think is really good for. What I had trouble with was when I held that, I kind of froze because I wanted to keep holding it and feel that safety, and that was the problem. I think that was the main problem why I couldn't get it going. Plus, I used it like 5, 6, no, maybe 10 times. At the end, I managed to do a few pumps. I'm sure if I had half a day, I would manage to do it.
Easy.
But I kind of froze. And with pump foiling, I cannot freeze because my hands are free. And I know I have to focus on my legs. So I had some trouble getting it started, but I saw all the advantages that the foil scoot actually has. And I feel like that's really to learn. That's the way to go.
Yeah, so you had a very small foil, huh? The one that's not the one I use normally to make people test. There's a Spitfire 1100. Normally they get the PNG 1300, which is much bigger and more stable. And then when you jump on it, you relax more because you don't feel like you're losing speed or you're losing lift right away. But yeah, I mean, you could manage to do a few pumps. I can tell you, kids learn it so quick. The other day I was in here in Basel in the Rhine in the river, and there's a family that came to try it because they wanted to try it before they would buy it. I do a lot of testing sessions around Switzerland. I have a WhatsApp group now with I think 40 people, something like that. In 1 week they were so eager to test it, and they basically contacted me on that group, and the whole family came to test, and they had two kids, and I can tell you that the kids would, they just, it took them 3 tries. And the parents a little bit more, but the kids, they were like, oh, this is amazing. Didn't want to leave. It was, yeah, it's crazy to see. But they, of course, they're lighter. So the foil really was, they had so much lift for them. They could just go they didn't even need to pump. They just went. It's so funny. Yeah, but kids learn it very, very quickly. Yeah.
And also getting the pumping movement, I guess it's easier because suddenly you're not only using your legs. And I think that actually the biggest problem after relieving your weight is then shifting it towards the front. And I guess with the foil scoot, I've never tried it. I would love to, maybe this summer or something.
Yeah, yeah, come in.
You don't really have to shift your weight in front because you can kind of tilt the board down using the handlebar, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, you could pump foil scoot, just holding the handlebar with two fingers or four fingers, mm-hmm. like that. You don't need power. This is just, the handlebar is technically just for the balance. Or recovering if suddenly the board touches the water. I have had many cases where the board just falls into the water, is this much deeper in the water, and you can still, by putting the handlebar, recover it, which would never be possible with a pump foil. So for this, it's amazing. But yeah, some people that know how to pump, especially, they tend to hold on the handlebar like crazy and say, "Ah, I don't want to let go. This is for everything."
Yeah, that's me. When you pump in Basel, are you on the Kraftwerkinsel? Where are you pumping in Basel?
So either in the summer, I'm really, really in the city center on the Steinbrücke, which is like the main concrete or stone bridge in the middle of Basel. I'm just under there. There are some stairs that I can drop from. But then I have to slalom between all the people swimming down the Rhine, which is quite funny because like people ask you questions while you're foiling. They're in the water with their floatable bag, you know, and they just look at you like, "Oh, what is this? Oh, it's amazing." And you just slalom between them. It's really cool. And then you have Kaiseroogst. Kaiseroogst is
More upstream, right?
Yeah, it's a little village. It has perfect docks to start. The stream is not too strong. This is where I usually train or foil or
sometimes foil drive when no one's looking.
we're gonna edit that out. But I guess on the German side, maybe you're even allowed to.
To foil drive or to pump?
Yeah, no, to foil drive.
I don't know. They prohibit it from like the right. I think if you go fully German side, maybe it's okay. But like, because in Kaiseroogst, half of the Rhine is owned by Switzerland, and the other half owned by like Germany. But they decided to like prohibit it. There's no, I mean, it's the rule from Switzerland.
Yeah, I know.
Any navigable or sailingable or whatever, like places, you're not allowed to use something motorized like that. But I don't know if especially a foil drive, you know, it's a foil assist. If they see you going there in the summer, maybe they have something to do to say about this. And the police is traveling quite a lot. But in the winter,
would they even notice? Would they see the difference between someone pumping and someone, getting up on foil? Well, anyway. Well, but I wanted to ask you, Benji, I have this little series of dock reviews, and I actually reviewed this Kraftwerkinsel, this PowerPoint island on YouTube. Maybe I can come to Kaiseroogst and you show me the place, and so we can make it accessible for people who want to foil in Basel.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Listen, you talked about, you mentioned the foil drive. Actually, one of my questions was, have you ever tried to combine the foil scoot with the foil drive? Is it even possible? Is it like something you have in mind?
I did it. I have some videos on my Instagram account where
I missed them.
I fixed it. Of course, you can't water start. So you have to start from a dock, and it's quite heavy, so it's tricky, but it works. And it's way harder, actually, that's probably the only thing that is way harder than pump foiling. It's way harder to keep the balance with the foil drive on the foil scoot than on a regular pump foil. Mm. Because the weight shifted like this, you know, the engine is so powerful that you go like this all the time. And it's really, it's so difficult to keep it. But I've actually developed a prototype that I didn't really show yet online of a prone foil board with the same system, like it's a foil scoot, but prone foil board style. So to water start. And because I wanted to know if it was possible to water start with a handlebar. and with the foot drive. And it works. I tested it. It works. It's difficult, but it works.
Looking forward to it then.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, honestly, foil drive only makes sense if you can water start it. If you start from a dock, then why even bother? Because
exactly. Yeah. Hence, no, it's just because I'm part of the foil drive team. And
you both are.
Yeah, true. Yeah, right.
And actually, I just talked to Dominic. I'm going to be able to test myself in like April when I'm at Lake Garda. Oh. They sent me one, so I can do that there. I'm really excited.
So cool. Yeah, Lake Garda is allowed, huh? That's cool. Yeah. I mean, Switzerland would be amazing if you could. I mean, e-foil, okay, I can understand. You know, there's like lakes are not that big. There's a lot of people in the water. You can go super fast on an e-foil. Okay, foil assist. Okay, if you don't go near people, obviously, but if you go like for downwinging, for example,
yes,
it'd be amazing.
You can use the same rules as like motorboats that you have to in a 90 degrees go out slowly, then faster. Maybe not being on foil in the first 150 or 300 meters, but you know, I get it as well. I actually wrote to the Straßenverkehrsamt, like the agency, if I were allowed to test it in winter when no one's around, but they said nope.
It's a very Swiss thing. It's
I actually asked the Bernese agency and they said no, and I thought, well, maybe I should ask the Roman, the French part as well. They're more chilled, maybe.
But there's so basically, I don't know if you've heard that story about this guy on an e-foil in Geneva. I think he was a banker or someone with a lot of money, but he bought an e-foil and went on Lake to like Genfersee, like Lake Geneva, e-foiling, and it was already like forbidden at that time. It was the beginning and they forbid it, but they were talking about maybe allowing it in some places or doing some exceptions or whatever. This guy went foiling, got caught by the police. Police said it's forbidden. He got a warning, came back a few weeks later, got caught again e-foiling, and then the police took his foil away, gave him a huge fine, and he decided to go to court to get his e-foil back and to say, no, like I should have the right to e-foil there, like very like arrogant. And they after the state heard that and they decided to definitely forbid it after this. Like the discussions were closed because of that guy. And because it was in the newspapers everywhere. And he got a big fine for his foil. And then he could not get his foil back, which was a 16,000 thing. And had to pay extra costs for the court and on top of it.
You know, I'm actually for that. I'm all for that. Because there would be so many people who don't know anything about water sports, about safety, just going too fast. And yeah, those are knives that go through water, and if they cross swimmers,
I mean, imagine in the summer there's people, divers, you know, now that I'm diving, I know the perspective or the vision from divers, and they're there, like the accidents can happen very, very easily. Even pump foiling, if you pump foil in a spot where they're divers, they are super scared of wing foilers, because wing foilers, they come extremely fast, very close to shore.
You don't see them from underwater. That is amazing. Listen, we're probably almost around the hour. Maybe, Benji, just I wanted to know about your YouTube real quick. Yeah. You have almost 600,000 subscribers, millions of views. How important are those for you? Are just numbers? And you say, well, that's a nice reach. Or do you earn money from YouTube? How is that for you?
I never really earned a lot with YouTube. This is... Okay, my girlfriend is entering the room. So I never really earned a lot of money with YouTube. This was always a hobby for me. And getting this community, it's amazing, but it's amazing for specifically one thing, is that it allows me to do a lot of projects that I would never be able to do if I didn't have a big community. Working with brands like Red Bull, for example, having sponsors like Axis, I mean, I'm into foiling for like 3 years now, and I'm not a professional foiler, you know, like the guys surfing the big waves or whatever, but I still have them as a sponsor, which is amazing. And it's all this because of the community I have on social media and the creative videos that I make, you know, and it opens a lot of doors. And this is the reason why I keep doing this. I mean, I would love to just foil and not film anything, just to do it myself. But then I would close so many doors for future projects, and this I don't want.
All right. Cool.
Before we ask the question we always do, Gael, I said I have a little surprise for you. Maybe you forgot already, but we always see us and our background. And I didn't do anything to my room, but if you want, Benji, you can also take part of it. Just show people who are looking how it looks where we record. So maybe it's a huge mess, maybe not. I'm going to start. You can choose whether you want to go as well. I'm here on my balance board. This is the room. It's like sewing machines. We have a little bike here. And here again. That's a tour of my office.
Let me clean everything first.
You don't have to take part, but Gael, go ahead.
Gael, come on.
So I got disconnected. Did I? Okay.
No, you're good. Yeah.
I also got my balance board, like my kettles board. I don't know if you can see.
Yeah.
On the floor. Water bowl. Then a whole bunch of photos. Yeah. The dream corner.
Nice.
A little of mess there. My kitchen. And then on this side, my balcony, which you can probably not see.
Yeah, we can see.
Nice. Larnaca City. That's it.
And behind you, like where you're looking at, is there a wall?
Nothing. Oh.
All right.
Ah, hey.
All right. Thank you very much, Benji. What do you think?
It's good to see the backstage.
How about yours?
The store, I mean, okay, the blinds are off, but you saw what that was outside.
Yeah.
So this is my camera mess from yesterday. We always have a little foil drive around there.
Nice.
This is where all my camera gears are inside there. This is like accounting. This is camera gears. This is the pad that I use for my new board. And then you have like another computer here.
All right.
And there you have the living room, the sliding door. Opens to the living room.
Is that where you edit your videos as well?
Yeah, this is exactly. I mean, I'm either traveling while editing or when I have some free days, I can edit here. Yeah,
that is very nice. So all the listeners on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever, if you want to see that, check out YouTube as well. All the episodes are either on my or Gael's channel. We always exchange it once he's up, once I'm up. I'm not actually sure where you're going to be, the Benji, but we'll see about that. Benji, before we stop and wrap it up, maybe you can just tell us what's next for you. You said you're going to go to Norway again. You said something about a special like prone surf scooter. What's next for Benji?
So Norway, I go back to the Lofoten in the last 2 weeks of March with my cameraman. And we're going to shoot some clips for Red Bull again, because I've been to the Lofoten last winter, but I had no time to film anything. I was just there 4 days with 3 hours of daylight per day. So you're very pressed by time and you cannot really do much. But so the goal is to go over there and get some nice surf foiling clips as well. They have some nice, nice spots. And unlike South Africa, there are no sharks over there. So... Nice. I'll be a little bit safer. And then I have some projects that I'm not going to talk about here because I don't want anyone to say, good. That's a good idea. I will go and do this. But I will go back to Norway again for a project that was supposed to happen last winter that kind of fucked up. But I will not say anything yet about this either because I don't know if it's going to fuck up again or not. But,
it will keep us posted through your channels.
Yeah. And we go to Spain as well with Kilian again.
Nice. Very nice. So if you want to see that, Benji Friant official, that's your Instagram, the YouTube, probably the same thing, Benjamin Friant.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to put it here on screen as well. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Benji.
One last question. Oh, you mentioned you're going to be in Lakeyard in April, yeah. And you might be reminded that there is the foiling week. Are you going to be there, Benji, and get people to try the foil scoot?
In April?
At the end of June, actually, the foiling week.
Okay, I have to check. Yeah. I didn't know about it, but I would love to come for sure. Yeah, I will check the dates, and if I'm free, I'd love to come down. Yeah.
I'm gonna be there with Foil Drive most probably. So if you're gonna come around, so that's
a race.
Super cool. Yeah.
Very cool. The next episode of our podcast is gonna be with Ikai. He's the guy from Board Tales. They do high quality board story, sometimes foiling, sometimes just longboards, maybe you've seen them as well. He's also the guy doing these superhero adaptations when people are on foil. So maybe you've seen a Batman on a Parawing, something like that. So that's going to be him. He's going to join me here at home. You've seen how it looks. So that's going to be exciting. Looking forward to it. Thank you very much, Benji, for coming on the show. Thanks to all the listeners. If you want to see older episodes or maybe some behind the scenes, we have a Patreon and we have a website, www.uponfoil.com, if you want to check that out. If you think about sponsoring, we're super happy. So hit us up if that's anything you want to do. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Gael, Benji, for coming on. See you guys
later.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.